Hi everyone, I'm Andy.
And I'm Allie.
And welcome back to yet another week of Marianne and Wanda, your favorite book club and media podcast.
Yes. And I think we're both excited about what we have to review today. But you have any big news you'd like to share with everyone before we get started?
I don't think I have any big news per se. We are going to try a new restaurant on Friday. So sad that you and I are not in town.
Oh, yeah, for Annalise's birthday?
Yeah. I forget what it's called, and I've never been there before, but it looks good, so.
Yes, I'm excited that you're branching out from the Barcelona wine bar. It's a good restaurant, but I do think diversity is good for everybody.
That's what Adam said. He's like, you guys are going there again every time we go. And I'm like, look, you just can't beat it. First of all, it's Spanish food, so it's already like next level delicious. Plus, you get to try a whole bunch of different stuff.
Sure.
For not that expensive when you consider like eating in downtown Nashville.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's generally like 40 or 50 bucks, and you get to try like 12 different foods. So
yeah,
you can't go wrong.
Yeah, I agree. You have a point there. They are delicious, but I do like that you guys are branching out a little bit.
Yeah, so we'll see how this place is on Friday. I need to look up what it's called, because I'll probably like look at the menu and look at the parking situation before we go.
But you obviously should.
Yeah, I think it's close enough that I could park at my work and walk, but I need to like map out the route and see if it really is walkable.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if so, there's I'm going to park there because it's free.
Yeah. And there's some suspicious things at Nashville, so you don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of suspicious activity going on recently. Yeah.
But, you know, parking is free downtown Nashville after 6 p.m., so.
Well, if you can find it on the street.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, but that's pretty much it. Looking forward to that. And then also looking forward to kind of relaxing some. We had a really busy month of March. Like we went to Michigan and South Carolina, and then we had two different groups of family come in to visit us for their spring breaks. So it was like either traveling a lot or entertaining a lot, which was fine. But I'm ready to just like sit down and do nothing.
Yeah, it's like a weekend off, you know?
Yeah. But I have a craft fair coming up, so I can't really even like sit down this weekend. I got to get stuff done for that.
Don't you just have like a lot of firing to do?
I need to make one more batch of mugs if I can get it done in time. But everything else I've got plenty of.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But mugs are always the biggest seller, so I need to have some more.
Well, fingers crossed you can do both.
Yeah. Anyway, anything else new with you?
Not a ton that's hugely new. I'm, of course, making progress on my dissertation, which sounds wild, but we'll see when I actually get to defend. I wanted to defend by June 1st, but my advisor is, he's got a lot of stuff on his plate. And if you ask me, he's taken on too many responsibilities, but it was his decision. Hmm. And so it's taking him longer to get stuff back to me than ideal. So we'll see if I actually get to achieve that goal. I have three of my five chapters are like mostly written or kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always good to hear. So making progress in that area. And then I also happen to make this is so many flavors in the sourdough loaf. It's sun-dried tomato, roasted garlic, basil pesto, and a little bit of Parmesan all inside a sourdough loaf.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tasty. It's like heavy hitters or strong hitters, whatever you want to say, for all of those flavors. But it's just like, yeah, I enjoy it. It was a good batch. Didn't rise as much as I wanted it to, but I'm still experimenting with this whole flavor thing. So
yeah,
not being too hard on myself on that.
I gotcha. Speaking of baked goods, the black cake that I got while my sister-in-law was in town, we went to a restaurant in Nashville. Do you know where the farmer's market is? Like the big one?
Mm-hmm.
So in there, there's a restaurant called Jamaica Way. It's all Jamaican food. And it was really good. The rest of the farmer's market was not open. And they were just about to close. But they do like all to-go plates, essentially. And so right when I was checking out, they had some black cake servings. And I was like, oh, man, I can't not get one. Because all the food there was like homemade by all the people working there. So I was like, okay, it's got to be legit and good. So I got one. Man, the rum coming off of that was so strong, but it was really good. I didn't taste a whole lot of candied fruits in there, kind of like we talked about in the book. But it definitely had nuts in it, and it was very moist and dense, which I wasn't expecting. But yeah, it was really good. Definitely yes. a spiced cake, which I don't typically like, but it was good.
Well, yeah, it's intrigued me to try like a cake made by somebody like from the region rather than like me trying to recreate one. So maybe, I mean, I'm sure that I can convince my family to swing by there one weekend. So
yeah, it was good. And this one did not have any of the topping, like none of the little flowers made out of, I can't remember what the icing was, but like nothing on top. It was just the cake. There was no icing or anything like that. No powdered sugar. But yeah, it was very good.
It's my understanding that most black cakes don't really have that. So I think that might have just been a family thing, I guess.
Yeah, and maybe for the wedding in the book.
As well, like, yeah.
Yeah, she had the purple flowers on the top.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so I finally got to try a real black cake.
And it was a good experience from the sound of it, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely very rummy, and I probably wouldn't go out of my way to get another one, but it was cool to try it and know that, like, they probably know what they're doing when they're making it.
Yeah, and you didn't hate it, so, like, huge win.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, so this week we are recapping Princess Diaries 2 Royal Engagement. And this would be following Princess Diaries 1 that we reviewed. How long ago was that? Like a year?
It had to have been like a year ago at least.
Yeah. Okay, so we're due, for the second one.
Yes, and I've been thinking about it, and I think that for one of my books, maybe next year, to keep in the theme of once per year, I'm going to make you read the first of the written Princess Diary books, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was doing a little bit of research today, like just kind of loosely, about the books behind the movies. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how many books are in the Princess Diaries series. Like, it was saying something about the third book, Mia and Michael are still together. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, hold on. How many of these are there?
There's a lot. There's like definitely four or five. My mom bought me them all when I was obsessed with... I guess this movie and everything. So I've read most of them, and I really enjoy the way that the story's different. Like the queen, I think we probably mentioned this when we watched the first one, but like Queen Clarice is not as she's portrayed in this movie. It's definitely like a chain smoking grandma who lives in a penthouse in New York City.
Really? I don't remember that detail.
Yeah, well, yeah, none of that is in the movie. So that would make sense.
No, I mean, I don't remember us talking about that when we did the first
one. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. So she's like, that's definitely her persona. And she's like not warm in the same way the Clarice that we know from the movies is. Mm-hmm. So I think you will have to at some point read one of them. So maybe next year I'll make you read the first in the series.
Sounds good.
But yeah, this is the one we watched this week. So this was released almost 20 years ago, so August 11th, 2004, which is wild.
Yeah, I think it was 3 years after the first one.
Yes.
Yeah, 2001, I think, was the first one.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And I feel like I remember when this one came out, but I don't think we like saw it in theaters or anything like that.
I don't know. I feel like we might have. I mean, 2004, we would have been in fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This could have been one that I saw in theaters. I don't really remember, but could have.
Yeah. Well, I have it on DVDs.
I had the VHS.
This came out on VHS?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because for whatever reason, I had this one. I had number two on VHS, but I did not even own the first one. I think my cousin had it.
That's wild to me because this must have been... Yeah, this is like the overlap between VHS and DVDs. So like by 2007, it was mostly DVDs.
Yeah.
So this is definitely in the overlap period.
Mm-hmm.
It had a budget of $45 million, and I was reading online that this wasn't like a huge box office success, but it made 3 times its budget worldwide. So I don't know what would be a marker of success other than that.
Yeah, I mean, so that seems like a lot to me.
Yeah, 135 million worldwide. So,
but it only scored a 26% on Rotten Tomatoes, which that's really low. Although that's kind of in line with the other Gary Marshall movie we watched. What was that one? New Year's Eve?
Yeah.
It was so bad.
Well, but that one's a lot worse than this one, I think. Yeah. This had an audience score of 59%. So
even that's not that good.
No, but it's a lot higher than what the critics are rating it. Yeah. The critics are always wrong.
Most of the time, I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also rated G, which is, I only noted because it was just very surprising to me, because I feel like some of the, well, I guess they don't like explicitly say or do anything that implies anything that wouldn't be rated G, but it definitely, the main romantic plot to me feels a little PG at least.
Yeah, I think so too. That is a little surprising that it was G, because like you said, it doesn't specifically, nothing happens that's inappropriate. Well, no, I'll take that back. There's some inappropriate moments, but I think the theme of temptation and all that is probably not a G-rated concept.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that it ever really implies that they, like, had sex or anything like that that would really push it farther into, like, PG-13. But there are, as you mentioned, like, some moments that are kind of towing the line here. So it's just, for all audience, when I think apparently.
When I think of G, I think of, like, Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had made a note that it was filmed in England and California, and I regret to inform you that it was not filmed in England.
Yes, so the castle, when she's flying over into Genovia, that is a castle in England.
No, it's not. Okay. Not according to Gary Marshall himself. Okay.
I'll take your word for it then, because the source I was reading is probably not from Gary Marshall.
No. So I watched the behind the scenes that was originally included on the DVD. And Gary Marshall said that they had, like, set everything up to be filmed in Prague, which is the capital of Czech Republic. Well, he said Czechoslovakia, so he was, like, 10 years, 15 years behind at that point. But they shifted production back to Burbank in Pasadena, California. And they built the set on the Disney Ranch, but they also found an estate that was in California for all of, like, the garden shots and everything. So they didn't make all of that external stuff, but it was all, like, in California.
I really wanted to know where the town of Genovia was filmed, because I thought it looked really cool, and I was disappointed to find out it was just a set on Universal Studios property.
Yeah, well, Disney property, but yeah.
Or whatever, wherever. It was a Universal Studios set. It wasn't even a real place.
Yeah, I mean, we hate to see it, but it makes sense.
Like, I love the little cobblestones and, like, the almost Italian esque features. Not even real.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the questions, right? Like, as to where Genovia is really supposed to be.
Okay, do you remember that book we read? What was it, like, Once Upon a Princess or something like that? The girl who was the theme park princess, and she goes to that little country that the prince is from. That one was between France and Spain. And I thought when we were reading that, I was like, oh, this reminds me so much of Genovia. And so I think in my head, I've always thought that's where it was. But I think I'm thinking of that book.
Well, that is a big question to me, though, because as part of this movie and the last movie, they have the Independence Day. And so that begs the question, who are they celebrating their independence from?
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, like, a very eclectic mix of Italian and French accents. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think at one point in the parliament, they're speaking French. And so it's like, okay, we must be somewhere in probably Western Europe. But just, like, I want a little more backstory about Genovia.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's got to be over somewhere near France. But did you know they have Panera in Genovia? Did you catch that?
I did. Did you see that there were also Nokia phones?
Yes, that was a little more upfront and obvious, but when Mia arrives in Genovia and she's driving down the cobblestone streets to go to the palace, I had to pause it because you can see a cafe in the background and it clearly says Panera Bread. And I was like, that's hilarious that there's Panera Bread in Genovia.
They're really widespread.
Yeah, that was funny. And then, yes, the Nokia phones definitely dates it for sure.
Yeah. And the poncho that she wears for part
of the scenes. I thought about that, too. I thought about your blue poncho.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so it was directed by Gary Marshall, who also did the first one. And we love Gary Marshall. I think we've probably done almost all of his movies at this point.
Not quite all. We still haven't done Pretty Woman, but that's on our list.
Yeah, and Mother's Day. We haven't done that one.
Yeah, well, that one's less important.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was watching this behind the scenes making, and I just really got the sense that, like, Gary Marshall's just, he was a really, really nice guy to work with. And I think that's part of the reason why he had a lot of the same actors come back for, like, movie after movie, and a lot of the same, like, screenwriters and whatnot come back time after time, mm-hmm. just because he was just honestly a nice guy to work with. Have you seen that documentary on Dan Schneider from Nickelodeon that recently came out?
I haven't watched it, but I've seen so many clips of it on social media that I feel like I've watched it at this point.
Well, I liked it. I recommend it. It's sometimes hard, but it was a good documentary. And it just seems like the contrast between Gary Marshall and, like, Dan Schneider or Harvey Weinstein is just, like, clear as day. Like, Gary Marshall was just a really, really good guy.
And loved a good parade.
Loved a good parade. Loved a good reporter scene. Like, we get it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, also, produced by Whitney Houston and Deborah Martin Chase, which I saw that when I was doing some research, and I was like, no way. I would have remembered if it was produced by Whitney Houston. And it was. I don't know how I didn't catch that. Was the first one also produced by her?
I don't think so.
I don't remember that either.
I don't think so. I think that they, Whitney Houston, because this was after the Cinderella that we watched, right?
I don't remember the year of that one.
It could not have been after 2004. So I think that, like, Whitney Houston just had, and Depo Martin Chase just had a good working relationship at that point with Disney. And so they helped produce this one as well. It was written by Shonda Rhimes, which is different than the first movie. And I was listening to this other podcast that had talked about this movie, and I won't drop the name of the podcast because they made me really upset multiple times. But they were like, maybe that's why Princess Diaries 2 is so much better than the first one, because it was written by Shonda Rhimes. And, you know, Shonda Rhimes can write, like, a good TV show and a good movie, but these are, like, they're both really good. Like, the first and the second are both incredible movies, and it's not, we don't need to pit these two against each other, I guess.
And I think it still stands that 9 times out of 10, the original is better than the sequel, and I would stand by that for this one, so I have to say they're wrong.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. I want to shout out the costume designer. So that's, the main costume designer was Gary Jones. And I think that he did a really good job on all of, particularly Queen Clarice's and Princess Mia's dresses. But I think that he did a really good job overall.
So I see that you have a note of your favorite Queen Clarice dress, which was?
I don't know that it was my favorite, but definitely her opening champagne colored gown. When she walks in and it's so sparkly, like, I loved it all.
I liked that one too, but then also I also liked the one she had on that was like a knee length olive colored dress with ruffles that went down the front.
The one for the wedding?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, that one's kind of simple, but I just really liked it on her.
Yeah, and they were talking again in the behind the scenes thing that they had tried to always keep Queen Clarice to be, like, shimmery and, like, more upbeat, and I think that that definitely comes through. Like, the cape or jacket or whatever, the duster, whatever you want to call the outer layer of that outfit, had, like, it was made of silk or whatever, and so it had, like, this nice sheen to it, and they really did a good job.
Yeah, when she says, out of my way, and, like, you see the cape flow. Yeah.
I also think that a lot of Mia's gowns, particularly, like, her red strapless gown that she wore for her birthday party with the opera gloves, that reminded me a lot of her last dress, I guess, her, oh no, that was her, like, debut as princess gown in the first movie. It was a very similar style, just with very different colors, obviously, and I think that it was gorgeous. So hats off to Gary Jones.
The only thing I will say about, not the costumes, but that scene of her birthday party where she's wearing the red dress and the gloves, I will say you can tell that Paolo did not do her hair for that one. That was I did not like her hair in that scene. There was too many like wild ringlets that just didn't look right. I was like, oh, Paolo, you could tell he was not hired for this job.
He only comes in for, I guess, the biggest events.
Yeah.
And then I will also say that the production design, as I mentioned, was mostly built in California, was done by Albert Brenner, who actually came out of retirement for Gary Marshall, and then he stayed out of retirement. So, like, he probably wasn't super serious about it, but he did come out of retirement. He had worked with him on Pretty Woman, and so he also did the stuff for this. So
we have a lot of the same cast returning. I think we could probably skip over reading all of them again. But I did think it was interesting that there is somebody named Eric Bragg, who had a small role in the first film and then had a larger role in the second film, which I didn't realize until doing some research. So the guy who plays Lionel, the security guard in the second movie, was the same guy in the first movie who is a student who says, "Lana got coned, Lana got coned." I thought it was funny that they brought that guy, that random person back.
Yeah, and they gave him a whole extra backstory. He's like the nephew of the Viscount or the Prime Minister or something. And that's how he gets the job.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things, though, is that halfway through the movie, with no explanation, he just gets some very blonde highlights in his hair.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. Well, it just really begs the question of, like, did he do this thinking that he was done filming scenes? Or was he just like, I just want to change my hair and they're not really going to care because I'm not a huge character in this film?
Well, if that's the case, they obviously didn't care because they didn't make him change it.
We do have a lot of new cast in this movie. Particularly, this was the movie debut of Chris Pine.
Do you remember the Lindsay Lohan movie with Chris Pine? Where she's really lucky and he's really unlucky?
Yeah, Just My Luck.
Okay, that would be, that's the one.
I don't know. I remember seeing all of like the previews or whatever for it, but I don't think I ever actually saw the movie.
I remember seeing it and it had to be around this time, but I thought that was his first movie.
No, that came out in like 2007 or something.
Okay.
So this was his like big movie debut and he did a very good job, I must say.
Yeah. He's not my favorite. I'm not a huge fan of him in general. Not him as a person, but him as an actor. I think there could have been other people who played the role better.
Okay, so if you were to choose
I don't have anybody in mind, but somebody else.
somebody else, you know?
Yeah.
They can figure it out. Well, I think he did a good job. He has, I think, a pretty big head, but other than that, I think he did a good job.
I think his hairstyle that's like, his hair is like gelled up, or maybe not gelled, but maybe blow dried, like 3 inches above the top of his head just makes his head look really long.
Well, yeah, but that was like early 2000s hair.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah.
That was a sign of the times.
Yeah.
We also have, as the bad guy, John, I think Rhys Davies is how you say that.
Yeah.
He's Viscount Mabry, and he also played Gimli in The Lord of the Rings. A wide range out of this actor.
Yeah. And then we have Brigitte and Brigida, Shay Curry and Anna White. They're supporting actresses, but they bring comedy for sure.
I think that if I had to pick, like outside of Queen Clarice and Princess Mia, if I had to pick my favorite actors in this, it would be them. They're so funny.
Yeah, I like them too. And also just to mention, I didn't realize until watching it back this time that Mia has her own maids, and then Queen Clarice has her own maids. And I forgot about that until Lionel was like, "I'm doing a background check on Olivia," and the other two just like slowly back away.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that they weren't the same Brigitte and Brigida.
Yeah. It's really funny.
Yeah.
I like them a lot.
And then, of course, Maurice the dog.
Yes. And then I know that we've talked in the past about how there's like a lot of like Gary Marshall's wife was in both of these movies. But we also see a lot more of his family. So his son, Scott, I almost said Sean. His son, Scott Marshall, plays Shades. His wife, of course, plays the string cheese lady. His granddaughter, Charlotte, plays one of the princesses. And then we also have Anne Hathaway's mother plays the choir director in the wedding scene. So lots of, like, cameos.
Oh, I didn't realize and that was her mom.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know that they look that similar, so it's very easy to miss that, but...
Sure.
And we also have Stan Lee in this, which is just, like, an interesting cameo, because as far as I know, he mostly just does the Marvel Cinema Universe.
Yeah. And so, what character did he play in this?
So when the guests are arriving to the wedding, there is a Spanish duo that walks in. And she's like, please excuse him. He learned his English from watching the Three Stooge movies.
Yep. And he's like, ooh.
Yeah, that's Stan Lee.
I didn't even realize that.
Don't know how we got this gig, but I'm here for it.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. So you made note of the soundtrack for this movie, which we already have mentioned that the soundtrack for the first movie was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
This one I did not remember as much. I think I had this soundtrack also when it used to be really popular that, like, when a movie would come out, you would get the soundtrack on CD. That's just not a thing anymore.
Not as much, no.
Yeah. But I do remember Breakaway being a key song.
Yeah. Did you know that was written by Avril Lavigne?
That feels like I might have known that, but I didn't remember it.
Of course, when they start singing the Three Little Maids song, I just see you and Sarah and Annalie and Shelby singing that. So
yeah. That was one of our favorites from JP2 Choir.
Yes. Go Knights. One of the ones I remember most. I loved it when Miracles Happen was sung in Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good callback to the first movie. And then I really loved Crown and Glory because did you know that Julie Andrews had vocal surgery? Like on her vocal cords, I think she had nodes, like not... what is that movie?
Perfect.
Yeah, we should add that to the list.
My notes. Yes.
So she had surgery, and it was in its earlier stages at the time, and she kind of regrets getting it done when she did. But this is the first song she sung in a movie, Your Crown and Glory, after the surgery. And you can definitely tell, like, she sings in a lower register, and she kind of, like, half talks it.
Mm-hmm.
She sings it with Raven Simone, but it's like, apparently on set everyone was crying when they saw it, because, like, this is such a huge thing to see Julie Andrews sing in person.
Yeah, two things about that. I wonder how many takes of that scene they did.
I know that actually it was one.
I kind of wondered if it was just one.
Yeah.
And then also, this surgery, was this an elective surgery? You said that she regretted doing it.
Yeah, I don't know that her life was threatened in any sense, but she definitely chose to do it, so.
Yeah, I didn't realize, I saw that she had the surgery in 1997. I didn't realize it was that long ago. Other than that, none of the other songs in it really stood out much to me. But
I was shocked to hear that Lindsay Lohan and Jesse McCartney sang two of the songs in this movie.
Yeah, the Jesse McCartney one was in the credits. I do remember that one, because when I heard it, I was like, oh, I forgot about this song.
Yeah.
Forgot about Jesse McCartney in general.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's easy to do so. And I think Norah Jones was a very good choice. She sings the Love Me Tender song.
Oh, yeah.
Which is originally by Elvis, but she sings it. And it's just always a hit whenever she sings anything.
So I have a few notes to go through, mostly questions or thoughts that I'm wondering about.
Same. My first thought, though, because it's that very early in the movie, when Mia enters her birthday party and she, like, flings a piece of metal off to one of her, I want to say maids in waiting. What are they?
No, it's the same guy from the first movie who catches it. It's a bracelet.
Yeah. But what's it? What is his role?
I don't know. He just, like, is a guard?
A guard? That doesn't feel right. Anyway, I have always thought my whole life that those were keys.
I think I always knew it was a bracelet because I think you can see it like fling off of her wrist almost like it's too big. And maybe it's just like charms jingling or something.
Maybe. But if you ask me, it doesn't really look like she enters with a bracelet, so
Yeah,
I
I
don't
don't
know.
know. I think it was just to call back that guard who was in the first one with it
Yeah.
happens all the time.
Yeah, it does, apparently.
I was a little confused in the beginning when Mia is graduating from wherever in California, and then
It's
she's.
actually Princeton. I looked it up. There's actually a Woodrow Wilson School of whatever.
Oh, maybe it was just filmed on a campus in California, and so that's where I thought she graduated. Anyway,
Whatever.
that doesn't matter. So she's flying back to the castle, and I guess I had thought that she spent more time there than she did. I thought she had even lived there a little bit already at that point, but then she asks if she can go exploring around the castle, like she doesn't know her way around. And then she also, like, her room is not ready when she gets there. So I was like, well, maybe she hasn't really been here much at all. Maybe like a quick visit or something. I don't know. What do you
Well,
think?
I had the same question because I know that she spent the summers between her 16th birthday and her 21st birthday in Genovia. And so I also
That's what
thought
I
she
thought.
definitely, and like, again, like she's waiting for her room to be done after her birthday party. And they're like, well, you can go explore. And it's like, well, okay. Like she should already know most of the castle already. So I have the same question.
Yeah, because she was like, I'm gonna go explore if that's okay. And then Charlotte is like, okay, but you're meeting the queen in an hour. But yeah, I was
Yes.
like, why would she need to go explore if she already knows her way around? But anyway.
And then she also finds a secret room, which I think we all can agree is what we secretly want in all of our houses.
So when she's finding this secret room, she's listening in on a parliament meeting, which I somehow forgot that the parliament people even existed before rewatching this because they had the queen and the queen makes the decision. But I think it's kind of interesting that this country, Genovia, has a queen and they also have a parliament where, like, almost they have to get approval from both parties for something to go into effect, sounds like.
I am kind of shocked that you were surprised by that because I think like the biggest monarchy that we think of is the English monarchy, and they have a constitutional monarchy, and I think that that's just very common in general. So I remember Parliament. I wasn't surprised by it at all.
I mean, I don't know why I didn't remember it because that's the whole reason she has to go through this movie of like, I have to find a husband because Parliament said so. But
Yeah,
it
and
also
this.
seems like Parliament can overthrow what the Queen says. So it's like, is the Queen really as powerful as she thinks?
No, I think that she's largely just like a figurehead who is more involved and so can suggest things. So like we see that
Yeah.
later with Mia and her orphanage home.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that it's mostly like Parliament sets the rules, which is why the one old guy can stand up and be like, she has to get married and it has to be in the next 30 days.
Yeah. First of all, that orphanage, when she was like, I have two homes and they have none. And the parliament people are mad because they can't use it as their summer house or something like that. I didn't catch that from the first, I mean, when I was younger and watching it. And that made me mad.
Oh yeah.
Shame
Like,
on
come
you,
on,
Parliament.
guys. Yeah, like give it up. Just rent your own place.
Yeah. And then she's like, I imagine it's not going to take us very long to raise the money for their own, is it? Because they want to get back to their summer house.
Yeah, exactly.
Along with the Parliament people, I am wondering when they're having the discussion about Mia has to find a husband in 30 days. Why was it not brought up in that discussion? That Clarice has been ruling the country for many years without a husband at her side. Like, why was that not even considered when they were like, nope, Mia's gotta have a husband?
A good question, and also, why didn't Clarice remember the rule either?
I
Like,
think
it
she
seems.
did. She just said, we've never enforced that rule,
Well, I
which
don't
is.
think. Well, she just never brought it up to me, and you think that she would have at least mentioned that?
Yeah, maybe she forgot just because they've never enforced it, which
Yeah.
also, like, Queen Clarice's husband passed away. If that was
King
the
Rupert, may
rule,
he rest in peace.
no, King Rupert is Mia's dad,
Oh, is
Clarice's
it?
son. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't know if Clarice's husband is ever named.
Must but not be.
When he supposedly passes away, why was that rule not implemented after he passed away?
That's a good question. Do you only have to, is it just to ascend the throne? I don't know. Seems dumb either way, which is, I think, a big theme about this is, like, women should have all the same rights as men. And so that's, like, the ending of this movie, of course.
Or I wonder if this was the sequence where Clarice's husband was at one point the king. When he passed away, King Rupert took the throne, who is Mia's dad. And then we know that he somehow passed away in an accident. And so it was probably, unexpected. And so then maybe Clarice assumed the throne because there was nobody else at the time.
Ah, that's a good theory. I think I like that a lot, actually.
Because Rupert never married after Helen, or never was with anybody after Helen, and they had not found Mia yet.
And so she definitely wasn't 21 at the time.
Right, yeah. So it had regardless. To be Clarice assumed the throne after Rupert's death.
Well, maybe you're right about that. That would make sense.
That's what I'm going to go with.
But then it still, again, wouldn't make sense as to why she wouldn't have to then subsequently get married.
Yeah, yeah.
Regardless.
Either way.
Either way.
So, yeah, Mia has to find a husband in 30 days, and I loved the scene of the slideshow of bachelors.
Yeah.
I wish we had a longer scene for that.
No. I think it was just short and sweet enough, and it felt very much so like a very early Tinder, just like the way you can just like swipe through.
Yeah, but obviously Charlotte put that together.
Yeah, and she like I guess she didn't have anyone fact checked the one potential candidate who was gay, who like both Mia and Lily were both like right on right after that, like loved that. And like Prince William, who was on there, and Clarice and Charlotte were both just like, we like to look at him. He was very eligible back then. He does not look as good these days as he did in the early 2000s.
Oh, I don't remember who it was exactly.
Prince William?
Oh, is that? No. Never mind. I'm thinking of the one that they were saying was gay.
No, somebody else. But Prince William was also in the slideshow.
Yeah.
And they were just like, we just like to look at him.
Yeah.
Not anymore. He's very bald now.
He is very bald.
Yeah.
So, in that slideshow, they come across Andrew Jacoby, which, first of all, Mia fumbled real hard with this one. I know she was not attracted to him and didn't feel the spark, but, like, he was such a real catch, like, polite, respectful, always attentive to what she needed, forgiving when it comes out that she's in a closet with somebody else. And he's a man of his word, like, is even willing to go through with the marriage because he told her, I will do this for you so that you don't lose control of your country. Like, never could go wrong with a guy like that, I don't think. And she just let it all slip away.
Yeah, and I understand why, but I do really, really like in this movie that he's, like, never the bad guy.
Yeah.
He's never in the way. He's never, like, trying to make her feel guilty about what she's doing. And it never really shows arranged marriage as being, like, a bad thing for somebody to do. It's just not a choice for everybody. And in this case, it's not a choice for Mia.
Yeah. And he came from not a similar background as Mia, but a similar background of, like, a royal family. So he was already used to, like, the media attention and all of that stuff. So it was, like, he would have been the perfect fit. And yeah,
and it, like, I think he said something like 200 years of arranged marriages in his family, so it's not even, I think that he'd probably already had it on his mind as this is a likely possibility for me in the future.
Yeah
He was also an Air Force pilot and an Olympic swimmer, so yeah. Very eligible bachelor.
And it said on his little Tinder profile in the slideshow that he liked photography. And then I thought it was cute that he gave her the ring in a film canister.
Mm-hmm. That was very cute.
I don't think I made that connection before watching it this time.
Yeah. Well, and then we see him in comparison to Lord Devereaux, who is Chris Pine's character. And it's like I understand where Mia's coming from, where she and Andrew just didn't have a huge, like, physical chemistry. Like, some people you just have a connection to. And I feel like that's what was heavily implied between her and Lord Devereaux. But I think that we, like, missed a lot of the reason as to why their relationship was developing.
Yeah, I didn't feel convinced as I was watching it that Mia and what's his name? The first name, Lord Devereaux?
Nicholas.
Nicholas, that's what. I never fully was convinced that what was going on between them was like an actual love interest. It was more just like little spats of arguing, but like that to me doesn't translate as flirting, or I don't know. I wasn't buying it. It didn't seem as genuine as I think they wanted it to be.
No, I mean, yeah, there was definitely like a lot of physical connection and some flirting, but I don't think that they ever had a huge like time to get to know each other until like the night before Mia's wedding or whatever when they ran away together.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, I
So
don't know. I just wasn't a fan of his. I didn't feel like his character was the best. And yeah, I don't know. I just wasn't convinced of their love story or love interest, rather.
sure. I do think, though, that he wasn't horrible as a character. Like, he was clearly being persuaded and motivated by his uncle, who was the big baddie, but he never, like, really spoke poorly of Mia. He was just like, I don't think that she was raised here, and so she doesn't really know the people of Genovia, and so she doesn't, well, I guess she shouldn't be their queen.
Yeah,
And
when
so,
you look at that from a broader perspective, that's a good point. Like,
yeah.
wouldn't want somebody to be the next president of the United States who doesn't know anything about the country. So I think that's
Right.
a valid point.
Right. And I think that's part of the reason, like, why you can't become president if you're not a citizen who was born in the
Right.
US.
Yeah.
So it does make a lot of sense. And that's why I think that he's never really felt that horrible to me. Like, it was definitely, he was just being persuaded by his uncle. And when the time came, he was just like, I don't want to be king. Like, I think Mia is a much better ruler for the country, and I completely step aside. I understand that he wasn't as good of a love interest, but I also really just appreciate that he wasn't a horrible person overall.
Yeah, I don't think he was horrible in terms of, like, yes, your opinion is correct that Mia didn't grow up there. She doesn't really know the people. She might not be the best fit objectively to assume the throne. But what I didn't like about him is that she was engaged and he still kept pushing it, like
Yeah.
trying to push the temptation on Mia, and that's why I didn't like him.
Yeah, like kissing an engaged woman, you should just never do.
Well, just any of their interactions really were not really appropriate. And I know that he had an agenda to that he was sent by his uncle to weasel his way in between Mia and Andrew Jacoby, but I don't know. Yeah, I just thought that part of his character was kind of sleazy.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
So, one thing I did not notice the first, well, not first time, but when I was younger watching it, I wasn't totally convinced that the way the royal family treated the staff or the townspeople was always that great.
I disagree, so I'm really interested to hear what you thought was so bad.
Not bad, but like I thought the way that they treated the maids in some scenes was, it could have been a little more polite because they are, like, I know that it's always like the royal family doesn't have to treat them well, but like it's the nice thing to do to respect somebody's autonomy and like that. Yeah, it's their job, but you can still be respectful when they're waiting on you. And just some of the scenes, I felt like they kind of like shooed the maids away or like wrote them off like they're just maids instead of people. I don't know. Maybe I read too much into it. I don't know.
Yes.
I'd have to go back and look at them. Just sometimes the attitude towards the maids I thought could have been a little nicer.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and then same with the townspeople. Like it seemed like when the townspeople would come and like, I brought a chicken for your table and a melon for your table and like all that stuff, it seemed like the queen and Mia's attitude towards the people was like, oh, these poor little peasants, they just don't know what they would do without us.
Oh,
I
I did not
don't
get
know.
that vibe at all. It was definitely, to me, it read more like, I know that I'm the queen, but I like understand and I will do what I can to help in this situation.
I
And
think.
so like whenever the, I think it was Jacqueline or whatever came up and was like asking about her scholarship, and the queen was like, we will make sure that this is reviewed for you. And it always felt like they were gracious when they were accepting the presents.
Yeah, that the scene with, or the words with Jacqueline. Yes, I agree. I think part of it is Mia's voice when she's speaking to the public or to the staff or whatever. She speaks like she is talking, like she's very royal. But then when she talks to a friend or to grandma or whoever, it's a more casual tone. And I think the more formal voice kind of gave like, I'm holier than thou vibe to me.
Okay, interesting.
I don't know. Did you not notice that her voice would change depending on who she's talking to?
Yeah, but I think that that was just like her being the queen versus like being able to drop that mask around people she was allowed to be comfortable with.
Yeah, maybe I felt like it wasn't as personable when she was using the more formal voice, like not as down
But
to
the
earth.
w but down to earth. Like that's the whole thing, is that they're supposed to be queens.
I
They're
know. Okay. I don't know. I just wasn't a fan of Mia's voice when it would change to
okay.
formal versus informal.
I think that that is just necessary when you are a royal in any country, I would think. I want to take a second to talk about Mia's growth from the first to the second movies, because I do think that there is a huge difference between 16-year-old Mia and 21-year-old Mia. And I like that a
Absolutely.
lot.
Yeah.
So I know some of the articles I saw online were like, we're so upset that Michael Moskowitz didn't get to be in this movie too. And I think that it was very indicative of like her growth as a person, that over those 5 years, she wasn't the same person, and her and Michael just like had different goals. And so they couldn't stay together, and they were still friends, but just not romantically entangled anymore.
Yeah, and it said Michael went to tour the country with his band, which he was actually in a band.
Yes, Rooney.
Yeah.
So yeah, I liked that a lot. But then I also really liked, I think it was very indicative, particularly her little speech at the end during her almost wedding, when she, like the difference between that speech and the speech at the end of the first movie, where in the second movie she was just very, like she spoke a lot more clearly. Like she started to rush at one point, but she slowed down and she didn't really seem as nervous. And I think that she just had a lot more of a queenly attitude at that point in time.
Yeah. She was a lot more eloquent.
Yeah. That. But I also liked that she held a lot of her similar character traits. So the way she was still clumsy, which might have just been a little bit of Anne Hathaway that they just caught on camera, but it seemed like she'd grown in a way that felt true to her character, and I enjoyed the way that they portrayed that.
Yeah, one thing I was reading though about Anne Hathaway from the first movie to the second movie is that she almost was not on board with doing a second movie because in those few years she felt like she didn't really know Mia anymore. Which I thought would have been interesting if they
I saw
hadn't
the
done
same
this.
thing,
Yeah.
and it turns out she like spoke to Gary Marshall about it, and Gary was just like, I believe in you. I know you can do this. If at any point you're uncomfortable, just talk to me and we'll get through it.
Yeah.
So that's like a 5-year difference. I can't even imagine between me today and me as a 23-year-old. You know, there's a huge amount of growth, and I don't always know that I understand myself from that time. So
Yeah, I agree.
yeah, very understandable to me.
I did think it was funny that Raven Simone, who plays Asana, which I don't know if it mentioned what country Asana is the princess of. Do you know?
I do not know.
Okay. I thought it was funny that her accent changed from British English to American English, depending on who she was talking to. Did you notice that?
I did not.
So when she first like catches up with Mia and taps her on the shoulder when Mia's sneaking a bite of cake, Mia turns around and is like, "Oh my gosh, how are you?" And Raven goes, "Oh, just partying, darling, you know." And then a little while later, when Mia's dancing with Jacques, the 12-year-old, she has a very American accent talking to the two other ladies and goes, "He wears aftershave to make him seem older." Like, just this very stark difference between their two voices, or between the two voices she uses.
I think that was just like in the same way you or I might put on a British accent when talking. I hate to say when talking to somebody who's royal, but quite frankly, if I met the Queen of England, may she rest in peace, I probably would have spoken in a British accent. And
You would?
I wonder if that's maybe part of it. I absolutely would have. The entire time we were in London, he got really annoyed with me because I kept speaking in a British accent.
Just telling everybody, hello, governor.
It's funny, okay?
I'm not denying it. I think that's funny too.
No, I didn't notice it, and I wonder if that was yet again an oversight or just like her being goofy.
Yeah, could be. I just thought it was funny.
Yeah. An exchange happens during the scene where Mia is supposed to be reviewing the Royal Guard, and after it, Hector, or I guess Joe, is talking to Lord Marbury, and Lord Marbury says, "You will find that the word fear is not my vocabulary." And then Joe replies, "Perhaps, but it is in your eyes." He
Yeah.
forgot something and then slings the fake snake onto the Lord's shoulder. And it's just, I think I think of all my favorite lines in this, it's not the most quotable, but I think it's my favorite. Just, it's in your eyes.
Yeah, it's a little gotcha moment. Like, you forgot this. Yeah, I think that's a very, like, almost like stare into your soul moment. Like, you might not think you're afraid, but you're afraid. It's in your eyes.
I can see it.
Yeah, I like that exchange too.
Did you have any other like favorite lines in this movie?
I didn't have a favorite line, but one line that stood out to me was when the queen in the beginning says, "The queen is never late. Everyone else is simply early." And I used to think that that was very profound, like, oh, what a great way to think about things. But now I just think it's rude to not respect everybody else's time. If it starts at 7 o'clock, then you need to be there at 7 o'clock.
Fair. She is the queen, though, so she does what she wants.
Yeah, exactly.
One of, I think, the lines that you and I have quoted to each other most often has been Paolo's line whenever he's doing Mia's hair for the
Oh
wedding.
yeah, I forgot
He
about
goes,
that. That's a good one.
"Oh, but a very, very cute moose," because the boy moose go, "Hwah."
And then
Yeah, so I mean, she does not look great in that hairstyle.
no.
No. And then I think the last thing I probably want to talk about is the real romantic plot line, which is I think Queen Clarice and Joe. I'm very glad that they got together at the end of this movie. There was a lot of teasing of it, like whenever Queen Clarice is reviewing the place settings for the wedding and the music, the dance together, and it's just. I love it. I'm so glad that after all of her years of putting her country first, she can put herself first and, marry the true love of her life.
Well, assuming that her husband did pass away.
And she talks about it.
But maybe he was the love of her life.
Well, no, because she says whenever they're talking about arranged marriage, Queen Clarice is like,
Oh,
"We were very fond of each other."
yeah. Yeah, and Mia says, "I don't want fondness."
Yeah, I want love. And it's Clarice had a healthy and loving relationship. It was just never like a huge romance for her.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. Yeah, I was really happy that Clarice and Joe ended up getting married.
Yeah.
Love to see
Love that for them.
it.
Love the way Joe retires and he's just like, "Shades, you're in charge now."
Yeah, good luck with Lionel.
Honestly.
being like, the eagle has landed, the eagle has landed.
Hushed tones. Hushed.
Pretty much it, I think, of my notes.
Yeah. Lots of callbacks between the movies. I think that you definitely didn't have to see the first one to watch this one, but I would encourage it for sure.
Yeah, some of the little one-liners, like you wrote down, I wonder if they'll have string cheese, like that mm-hmm. referencing the first one. Funny. Funny thing. Yeah. And shut up.
Shut up. Oh, so funny. To hear Queen Clary saying this, she's been influenced. Loved it.
Yeah. Okay, are we ready to rate?
I think so. What do you think our scale should be this time?
I would like to rate this one out of 5 flaming arrows.
And we haven't even talked about that. What a ceremony. Flaming arrow yeah. through the circle to announce our coronation.
Yeah, and all of the practice that Mia had to do leading up to that point and all the arrows just going, like, wildly away from the target.
Wildly. You think that they would clear the area, but she almost hits gardeners, like, 3 different times.
Yeah, and the maids.
Yes. They shouldn't have let anyone be in the area at that time.
Yeah, but yeah, out of 5 flaming arrows.
Easily, like, a 4.9. Easy.
Okay.
I love this movie.
I want to say that I gave the first one a 5, and I don't remember if I did. I don't think our chart goes back that far.
It does not, but if I had to guess, I think we both gave that one a 5.
I think so, too. I am going to go for this one.
Ouch.
It's not ouch. That's a good score.
Why are you docking so many points off, I guess?
Mostly because of Nicholas trying to weasel his way in. I know that's what his uncle was influencing him to do, but I just thought it was very disrespectful.
Indeed it was.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. So,
yeah.
So, our next short story series is, of course, by Edgar Allan Poe, and we are reading A Tale for Heart first, which you can find online. And then our book for the month of April is Olympus, Texas by Stacy Swan. So if you haven't gotten your copy yet, please pick that up or get it from your local library.
Yeah, I checked that one out on the Libby app, and there was, believe it or not, 0 people waiting to read it. So I got it.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
I don't know either. How long has it been out?
I think it also came out in 2023. Yeah, I think it came out last year.
Ooh, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing then.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. 2021. So it's been around a little longer.
Oh, okay. A few years. Okay, so maybe not a huge demand then yet.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Marianne and Wanda. We would love to hear your feedback and if you have any books or topics for us to review.
You can reach us at Marianne and Wanda Podcast on Instagram or send us an email at marianneandwandapodcast@gmail.com. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.